Okay, guys, welcome back to the latest Nintendo Fanboys. Yeah, I do a horrible, horrible Jared impression, but he's not here today. But we do have Mr. Steven. He always joins us in the podcast as much as he can. How you been, Steven?
I've been pretty well. It's been a while since we've done this. We used to do this like every week when we restarted doing these podcasts, I think in June or July. So it's been a while, but hopefully we can get back on schedule here.
Exactly. And I do
think this is the first Tim Steven podcast ever.
Yes, I was going to say that. And definitely I've done the Canadian several times.
And it's your first Fanboys too.
Exactly, which I'm looking forward to because I grew up on Nintendo, as you guys all know. And I still say that you guys are more hardcore fans than myself, but that's all good. But we have a lot to talk about today, and we're going to start off with, I believe, what everyone's been playing, or at least should be playing, is a new DLC for the Pokemon Sword and Shield, the Crown Tundra, which I think I'm going to let Steven start off with that because he is our guru when it comes to Pokemon, and I will charm in as well.
Okay, so a Crown Tundra came out on the 23rd of October, so it's been a while. It's been almost 3 weeks now. It will be 3 weeks this Friday since it's been out, and it's probably going to be the last piece of content we get for Sword and Shield. So now these games are officially complete, and next year we're probably going to get something else, which is a bit disappointing. I was hoping for a third piece of DLC, maybe in February, just to tie us over until the next release, which will probably be in November. I was hoping for something just to keep me playing. This is pretty much all I'm doing right now, is I'm playing Pokemon. And I'm starting to run out of things to keep myself occupied. Like I keep finding more stuff and more stuff here and there, but it's obviously I find myself kind of pushing myself to play more than actually wanting or craving to play it, as I did with the Isle of Armor in the first week of the Crown Tundra. So we'll see. But I thought the Crown Tundra was very good. I think this is the DLC expansion more aimed at casual gamers. To be honest, I really enjoyed the Isle of Armor way more than the Crown Tundra, because the Crown Tundra is all about capturing legendaries. That's all you do, and there's zero battling in there. I think there's one battle at the start of the DLC where you battle that the dad of the girl, and then I don't think there's a single battle after that with an NPC, I believe. So it's basically capturing legendaries and legendaries, and there's a few new ones, so that's cool. I love that, capturing the Regis again and the Swords of Justice again, and the fact that you can actually capture Keldeo in-game, which I believe was the first time you could do that. It was awesome. And the new Galarian birds were a blast to go get and whatnot. Dynamax Adventures is still a fantastic gameplay mode. We've played that for a few streams now. We haven't played this in a while. We need to get back to, because I'm really enjoying those. But I'm going to get more into the Crown Tundra later, but I did enjoy it, but the Isle of Armor was far more enjoyable for me because it was more about competitive battling, was more about EVs and IVs, and there was also lots and lots of stuff. For me, I know a lot of people did not like getting those 151 Diglets. For me, that was just something that I adored doing. It gave me a reason to keep exploring and whatnot, and there was so much to do. And with the Crown Tundra, it felt like I had the Pokédex completed like this on the second day, and then all it was basically doing Dynamax adventures. So I still have a lot. We're gonna talk about the shiny mechanics and the Dynamax adventures later. But for me, I'll be honest, I preferred the Isle of Armor. But I think for casuals, especially since you have a chance to catch every single legendary ever released in this game, besides the medicals, which there's a difference. So yeah, you can catch every legendary ever here. And for me, I already have like 2, 3, if not 4 or 5 of these legendaries in Pokemon Home. So it's not as exciting for me as it is for you or for people who might not have played Pokemon since the Game Boy or the DS days. So that's my first impression of the Crown Tundra.
Interesting, interesting, Steven. I can see where you're coming from in the thinking retrospect about the Isle of Armor. You're right. There was a lot more I felt exploring. Well, for one thing, let me tell you guys, I've not completed the story in because I'm having such a blast playing with Steven and Cranberry on the Ventures, which I think is an excellent addition. Now, for someone like me who has not been keeping up with the series, it's awesome seeing these legendary Pokemon and every adventure being random. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how they can advance this feature in the future, especially the next gen, which they might actually make it part of the base instead of DLC. We'll see about that. We don't have any info. But yeah, I love the Ventures. I think it's an excellent way of keeping things going. Now, we'll talk about the shiny bit elements later, but yeah, I agree with you. The Island of Armor was a lot more exploring. I was going around, and I agree with you. The Diglett thing, and I think I told you guys this on streams too, I love elements like that. Yeah, it might be tedious, but it's good to see that them giving you side content. And as an MMO player, I'm very used to that kind of, it's called filler content. But it's really good because it gives you objectives and goals to do long-term is something that takes some time. I don't know how long it took you to get all the Diglets, but it's kind of cool. You go around, and you're going to be around anyways. But interesting take. I honestly thought you were going to love the Tundra better than the Isle of Armor. But yeah, interesting. And I do agree with you on the fact that the Ventures is awesome. It's very, very cool. And unfortunately, I haven't. Oh, one thing I wanted to talk about is the story kind of has it more open ended too, where okay, here's three clues, go out and choose. So I kind of like that. I kind of like the direction because I would love to see Pokemon go from a less linear path and more into an open. And I don't mean 100% open world. I know everyone talks about that, but I like the flexibility that my adventure could be way different and more unique than yours, Steve. And we could take our own paths, our own time, and don't have to follow the story A to story Z to the end. Yeah, so good stuff.
Yeah, I did, like I said, the Galarian birds I thought was awesome. Like I went ahead and I finished the story in both games. I went ahead and went to my Shield version and finished the story there also and got the birds and the Regis again. And I just love the birds. The birds are fantastic. Like they're a lot of fun to go and catch because they run away. They're actually roaming in the tree wild areas in the game, and you need to hunt them, and that's fun. It's really, really fun. And then they're like everybody is freaking out about these legendary capture rates, but it seems I don't know what they're freaking out about. It's always been like this, and I don't want this to change. These suckers should not be easy to catch, so I don't know why people are complaining. Okay, and I'm getting the extra challenge because I'm catching all of these in Premier Balls, which have the same catch rates as Pokeballs, so it's a lot harder to catch. So I went, like, it took me like 40 or 50 Premier Balls per legendary bird to get these, and then I did the same thing with the Calyrex and the horses, so it's a lot of fun. I do, though, think that the Calyrex story, although I enjoyed it, I thought it was very lazily told. Like, basically, you had this big king legendary right there, hiding somehow from people, saying that people forgot about him, where he could simply just show up in front of them, like they were like 6 feet away from him, and he would go hide like in these bushes behind the village where you could easily be seen. And if you would basically run to the mayor, talk to the mayor, then run to that, talk to him, go back and forth. Like there was not much clever way of telling the story. It was just kind of like a bit on the lazy side and no animation. It was basically the same thing that some of the same problems with the main game, but whatever, it was fun. I really love Calyrex, especially since he can fuse with two different horses, and obviously you can only choose one. So I went and got the other one from my second game, and they're just a lot of fun to play with. It's probably one of the first time I actually play with the legendary. Usually I just box them and don't bother, but he's a lot of fun. And catching the Regis too was very disappointing because in the they were introduced in Ruby and Sapphire, and you had to do a lot of stuff to catch them back then. And I don't clearly remember how you did it, but there was like I think you had to capture like a certain number of unknown letters to form something. You had to read like I don't know how you call it, like how blind people read. Is it Braille? What's
Oh, it's
the
Braille.
Braille? And you had to solve many puzzles. You needed like two HMs, and you needed like Wailord in your party, something like that. So it took like a lot of time and a lot of figuring out how to get those Regis. And they were in three different parts. And now in this one, they're just basically in three different caves, and you solve this extremely simple puzzle that makes it ridiculous that these caves have been unopened for hundreds and hundreds of years or thousands of years. Where like literally the first puzzle says like you need the first Pokemon in your party to hold a never changing stone. So basically you know that you put it you give him an Everstone and then you read the text and door opens and that's it. Voila, like you somehow solve this huge legend mystery. So I thought that was just a bit lazily handled. I would have preferred something else, but then again, I went ahead and caught a shiny Regirock, which was freaking awesome. Like it's my favorite Pokemon right now. I just yesterday got made a team around him with a few others with Galarian Zapdos, and just went to was able to reach Master Rank in VGC ranked, which was awesome. Like I had a lot of fun, and I'm pretty much the only one who's using Regirock. I haven't seen a single other Regirock when I'm playing, so it's fun. I'm using Pokemon that not really many people use, and I actually caught him in a luxury ball, and I was really I had a Master Ball in case he ever got to the point where he was struggling, and so he wouldn't kill himself. But yeah, man, I got a shiny Regirock in 600 encounters or less, or maybe a bit more. Which is so much under odds. I can't complain about that one because I've had terrible luck with many of my shinies. I know for you this is like ridiculous. It's hardcore because you're basically doing 600 encounters to get a shiny, and odds are you're not gonna get him under 2,000 encounters. Like it's very rare because the odds are 1 in 1,300. But really, it's like most people online. Like I was really lucky and I caught him. Caught him, and then I'm really, really happy with that. And then there's the two new Regis, and there's a lot of stuff. But it's the way that you get those specific Pokemon was not like done in a clever way, I
I
thought.
see, I
Like,
see.
yeah, I much preferred the way with how you evolved your Kung Fu in Isle of Armor, where you chose the two towers, even though those towers were not necessarily that exciting in there. You at least had a pretty cool path to get to those towers, and then inside you had four battles to do, and then there was a scroll. So there was some storytelling in there I enjoyed. But yeah, that's pretty much it so far for the main three story parts. I don't think you've only done the first one, right?
Yeah,
Only done Calyrex.
I got to really focus on that. But like I said, I've been having such a blast with you guys with the Dungeon Adventures. I'm not sure if I'm going to stream the story elements or not. I might. But anyways, I do agree the story path. I loved the idea of how your Pokemon, I thought was very unique, how you could choose a certain path, water, dark, or etc., fighting. Or actually, it was dark and water because his base was fighting. But yeah, I loved that element. And that was another prop to Isle, how unique. And when I finished the whole Tundra thing, then I could definitely probably agree with you. But yeah, it's interesting, man. And I really think if you judge it as a whole package, maybe that's a better way of doing it, as both components together did a, I think, honestly, did a huge improvement to the base
Yeah, like
game.
I said, I think that the Isle of Armor is for hardcore Pokemon fans, and the Crown Tundra is for casual fans. Like, yeah, there's of course there's a bit of both. Like a casual fan can enjoy the Isle of Armor, and a hardcore fan like me can enjoy Crown Tundra. I'm not saying the opposite, but I think the Isle of Armor was more designed for competitive play, and the Isle of Armor was for people to get all the legendaries that they always somehow scream for every time. So.
Oh, and I want to say congratulations on your team. You got to master's ranks. Oh, I wish, actually, I know you
that's
don't
why, have... That's why I wanted to I want to stream so we can play a bit of Dynamax Adventures. I can show you my team and we can have a battle. We haven't had a battle in forever, so I wanted to show you my team.
Since we're talking about that, are you available anytime this week? I'm pretty sure I could set up get a decent time so we could get on. Maybe you said you're not available tomorrow, but maybe it's Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, or definitely the weekend for sure. We could battle or do some adventures as well.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see.
All right, perfect. Now, did you want to your impressions were good. Do you want to talk about the shiny? Before we do that, though, just to let you guys know, I wish Steven and I streamed it. Cranberry was unavailable, but Steven and I caught Mewtwo with him and I and two AI bots. And during the whole thing, we're like, we're not going to get it. We were a bit lucky, though, dude. He didn't use his recovery, I think only once during the battle, but man, it felt great because a little bit of trivia. When I was red and blue when I first started in Pokemon years ago, I was hardcore into that game, and I actually set out to catch Mewtwo with a Pokeball, not a Master Ball, but a Pokeball. So to catch Mewtwo again, kind of on not quite that level of intensity, but it was still very cool for me being a fan of the original Mewtwo and how I was dedicated it's not cheating using the MasterCard ball, but I chose to choose the hard route, and I thought you and I had a pretty good battle. It was really interesting. We both were getting into it, and it was a lot of fun. Too bad we weren't streaming it. It would have been real fun for people to see.
Yeah, so might as well dig into Dynamax Adventures. So this is really, I think, the best part about the Crown Tundra, because it's a co-op challenging mode. Like there is actual challenge here for you to succeed. It's not even guaranteed. Even when you're four players, I've failed some Dynamax Adventures with four players without any AI, and we've still failed because it always depends. It's if you're communicating, it's a lot easier than if you're not. Because that's something that's a bit frustrating sometimes when I'm playing with random people, is that there's always that guy who, after every battle, who wants to switch Pokemon. And then you're like, why did you ask to switch Pokemon the previous battle if you're going to ask to switch again? Like, you need to really, you should not switch more than once, basically, because you need other people to switch. And you also need to have a strategy. Let's say the final, you see the final boss is a dragon type. You should be looking out on your path if you can spot any ice or fairy types. That way you can switch to them, and if you yourself already have a fairy type in your battle, in your team, you should not ask to switch for it. So a good tip for people is that I always, when I'm on the verge, whether I want to switch or not, I always wait to see if any other people ask to switch, and if I see that exclamation point pop, then I don't ask to switch and I let them have it, because I don't really need it. But sometimes some people, they always ask for it, and it's really annoying. But when you have communication, it's a lot of fun. We usually, on one or two streams, we had some really good successes when we had a clear strategy and we stuck to it, and we had some success because of that. So the goal is you need to fight three Dynamax Pokemon, and then you need to fight a boss. And the trick is you can only... you can't have more than four deaths in the entire run, and also a battle cannot last more than 10 turns, which I've never seen happen yet, but it's still another outcome that can happen for a loss. And then after every battle, you can choose to bring that Pokemon with you or not, but you can only one of your the party members can bring it with you. And all your HP and power points, they all carry over. So you need to be careful. And you also need to consider what types you're going to be facing ahead. And then you can capture those Pokemon, and it's 100% capture rate. So whatever ball you catch, you throw, you're going to catch it. So don't be throwing that Master Ball at those legendaries, because you're going to catch them even if you throw a Pokeball at them, like Tin did with Mewtwo back in the day. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. And then to top it all off, you have the best shiny odds in the game. Even if you don't have a shiny charm, like Tim, the odds of getting a shiny is 1 in 300. So the best possible odds right now in Sword and Shield before Dynamax Adventures was doing the Masuda method paired with a shiny charm. That gave you a 1 in 512 odds of getting a shiny after every egg that you hatch. And even with that method, like, I've gotten some shinies after like 1500 eggs. So it takes a lot of patience sometimes, but then I got a shiny Mimikyu once with like 12 or 13 eggs. So it can happen fast. Yeah, it can happen fast, or it can take a lot of time. But this is crazy, because with the shiny charm, the odds in the Dynamax Adventures are 1 in 100. So that's why I kind of regret, because at the beginning of Dynamax Adventures, I did not know these odds, and I caught like 4 or 5 legendaries. And like I said, I already have like multiple of these, so I don't really need them. So I wished I would not have caught them, and then I would have waited until I got a shiny eventually. So, but whatever. But yeah, those odds are kick-ass. And I even played one Dynamax Adventure with my Shield version, which I did not own the – I do not have the shiny charm on there. And I got myself a shiny Blaziken, which I was just really happy about. Like, I got a shiny Blaziken, like 1 in 300 odds. It's still kick-ass odds. Like, even you have kick-ass odds. And I've gotten like 3 or 4 shinies right now with Sword playing Dynamax Adventures, but no legendaries yet. So I'm hoping I can get one. I'm catching all my legendaries in the Premier Balls just in case they're shiny. I'm going to keep them. But right now my strategy is I don't keep any shiny, any legendary unless it's shiny. And I'm going to stick to that right now because, like I said, I already have these. So hoping to get like a bit more luck there, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and thinking of which, as you hear during the streams, I'm like, oh, I'm always debating, but I've been keeping most. I didn't keep a few, but it's like I don't have a lot of these legendaries, as you know, Steven. So for me, they're all brand new, and some of them look so awesome. They're just default colors. But no, I need to start doing that, because with these awesome odds, plus it gives not only the awesome odds, increased chance of getting it, also it gives more replayability too, because I can just do more and more runs. I'm hooked on it, man. And like I said, I'm really curious to see how they can use it. Maybe I'm assuming there's going to be events for this, like they do with the Dynamax raids, you know, stuff like that. So I'm assuming there are going to be special runs that for the ventures that will be added to the game, stuff like that. So I'm really, really looking forward to it. And I'm really looking forward to what Gen 9 will bring to the table. I don't know if they're going to, I hope they include this as the core game, as post-game, and they probably most likely do DLC, but I don't know, man. It looks like Pokemon's going in a new, not a necessary new direction, but a more open direction, and I kind of like that as more of a options, because like I said, at the end of the day, I want to have a different adventure from you, and we don't finish the same path with the same. And now, if next gen, if they can only get some tips from like Nexomon on their gym leader composition or Tum Tum, I would really be happy, where they'd be a lot more challenging. That is a different topic for another day, though.
Yeah, no, I have no idea what's going on with Gen 9 right now. Like 2020 was the first year we haven't had a brand new Pokemon game since 2015, so it's we're in new territories right now. I'm not even sure if 2021, like I've speculated before, I think we'll get the new game in November, but it could be just another Let's Go game, or it could be a Gen 4 remake. I have no idea. Gen 4 remake would make sense right now, because it typically, I think it'll take them a bit more time to create Gen 9, but it depends. Like, I'm hoping they polish up the graphics a bit. Like, yeah. I would like a better, more like AAA experience just on the graphics side, because I think the gameplay is solid. I don't really have many gripes with the gameplay, but like the visuals, like for like the company that has the most profitable brand in the history of everything, including Superman and Star Wars, whatever you name it, Pokemon is the most profitable brand ever. Like there's not really any excuses anymore for at least. It should be one of the best looking game on the Switch. Like it should look the part. Like, but that's pretty much what I'm hoping for Gem 9. But I think they would need to get help, because I don't think Game Freak is able or is even motivated to do so, because right now they don't really need to do that much effort with the visuals, because this game sold 19 million copies, will probably surpassed 20 million by the end of the year, so they're well on their way they're not going to run out of money anytime soon.
You make a good, valid point, and you have to remember too, Nintendo has a tendency of not including in their numbers the download count, which I don't understand why they don't. Because let's say it's 19 million and it's an extra.
Yeah, those 19 million includes.
Oh, they include?
Yeah, those are the actual Nintendo numbers that they just released last week, I believe. They also released like the Animal Crossing numbers. Animal Crossing sold 26 million copies. And I read a tweet from Colin Moriarty. I don't know if you know who he is, but Animal Crossing has sold more copies than any PlayStation exclusive ever.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was reading about the numbers.
And that's in less than a year.
It's amazing.
It was released on the 20th of March. So.
And we've talked about this before when you talk about motivation for Pokemon, for instance, upping the graphics, which you're right, there's no excuse for that. We've had this discussion many times. A prime example of Nintendo was Zelda. Zelda, hold on one second, my dog's going a little crazy. Prime example of Zelda is it's been struggling sales-wise for some time. What do? They changed some major changes, and it's sold almost 20 million copies. That's amazing. It shows you how they got off their ass.
The difference is, like you said, like Zelda has never sold.
Exactly.
Pokemon has not stopped selling.
And
so the incentive, like, it's not there as much. But I think it would be worth it just to, because those, like, I don't. Like, it's hard to play Pokemon and look. Especially since I played Dragon Quest XI. It's like I'm going all the way back to 2019. And I finished Dragon Quest XI. And then, like, a month after, I started Sword and Shield. And you can see the difference. Like, those trees in Sword and Shield, they look ridiculous. And just the opening sequence of Sword and Shield where you have the announcer talking and there's no voice coming out of it. It's like, it's so... like amateur, whatever. So I'm hoping one day I get like a AAA Pokemon. Not that this game is crap, but just something that to show like a bit more care. Like Dragon Quest XI, you could see that this was a Dragon Quest game made with love. That they gave it their all, and it was just wonderful.
Yes.
Pokemon Sword and Shield, I don't think I could say that with that game, even though it's a game I have over 600 hours into. Like, this is my kind of game. Like, this is what I want to play all the time. So, but I just wish that I could get a dream game. Like, for me, Dragon Quest XI was a dream Dragon Quest game. I want the same with Pokemon eventually, and if it takes them another 5 years, I have no problem with that, as long as they keep me in the loops. Exactly. And they keep, like, that's why I would want a bit more DLC for that, because if there's no new Pokemon game in 2021, I'll be in trouble.
And yes, and I agree 100% with you with about Dragon Quest XI. And let me tell you, the voice acting in Dragon Quest XI really helped to me portray or develop the characters' personalities. Like, tell me. It just adds to the experience, and we don't need, you know, like we don't need Pokemon to have an epic, huge storyline on the lines, you know, of like Knights of the Old Republic. I'm not asking for that, but I do agree with you. They need to give a little bit more fan love or fare, whatever you want to call it. Increase the graphics, outsource it. There's so many different engines out there that they could do. They don't have to build it in house anymore. I don't know if they did or not, but I'm just saying there's so many options out there that they could do. And voice that, it's time. And it just adds the presentation of your product. And like I said, there's no excuses for that. And hopefully, I don't know. It's just hard, like you said, for motivation. The product sells. They're going to make a lot of money. They don't. Any business, they're always like that. They put minimum investment, maximum gain. So, you know, from a business standpoint, I can understand fully. From a fan standpoint, though, no, I agree with you. The every little bit presentation. This is 2020. We still need, I think, voice acting. Like I said, it doesn't need to be an epic storyline, but it doesn't need to be dark just for the sake of being dark. I don't think Pokemon's a dark franchise. I know that's a thing people love now. They want every game to be dark and edgy, but not Pokemon. But I do appreciate the idea of awesome graphics and great, some good voice acting. It really helps the presentation of your product.
Yep, so I think we've covered the Crown Tundra pretty good now. It's been 30 minutes, so we
Oh, I
should
know,
probably
right?
move on before we.
All right. So besides that, Stephen, some news like about the last couple weeks is the Switch has officially outsold the Super Nintendo. Not sorry, the Nintendo Entertainment System, the original 8-bit king. Of course, the NES was not the top-selling Nintendo console. I'm going to go over the numbers real quick, Stephen, and then we could get our feedback. This is for the consoles, the mainline consoles, not including the DS. I'll give the DS numbers in a second. The best-selling Nintendo console to date is the Wii, 101 units, a little bit more than that, but we don't have to worry about that. The second was the NES at 61.91 million, the Super NES coming in third at 49.10. This is post-Switch. 64 was 32 million, GameCube 21 million, and the poor Wii U at 13.56 million units. And the Switch's numbers right now are 68.3 30 million. So, congratulations to the Nintendo Switch. It still has a little bit of way to go to beat the Wii U. And then I want to add in the Nintendo DS, their
Yeah,
best-selling
you mean the
system.
Wii? I don't think.
I'm sorry, Wii, not the
I think it
Wii
has no issues together with you. But the Wii, I think will be. I think they will eventually beat the DS. I believe it's at 150. So I don't think they'll ever reach the DS. But
No.
the Wii, I think they have a solid shot at beating
The Wii.
the Wii, especially when they have Breath of the Wild 2, which probably will be out if not next year in 2022. And I think that would be a huge seller,
Oh.
considering the Breath of the Wild, the first one, like have sold. I think it's sold 20 million now.
Yes.
So yeah, I think they have a few more games to put it over the 100 million mark easily, but I don't think they have a shot in hell at reaching the DS numbers. That
No.
will never happen.
No.
But yeah,
The
it's a
DS, I agree with the DS to let you guys know as of the it's 154.02 million, the combined models, all the DS models. And then the Nintendo 3DS is about 75.87 million. And I agree with you. The only thing is the Switch has released in 2017, so it has some time, but you also forget there's one huge game coming out in March 2021 that's going to sell substantially. Monster Hunter Rise. People, I don't think, realize how big that series. That is the number one series in Japan, by the way, and it's gonna sell the Switch like
Yeah,
hotcakes.
I'm curious about that because the number one series in Japan is Dragon Quest.
Well,
And Dragon
besides, yeah.
Quest 11, I think, sold 3 million copies in Japan, maybe 4. That there's a even being huge in Japan, like, is like a has the same sales as like Fire Emblem, basically. Fire Emblem Treehouse like sold maybe 3 million copies. Like, it's a bit under, but it's like just want to you and the people to understand that being huge in Japan does not necessarily translate to money unless they're huge here.
That is a good
Because
point.
Dragon Quest has never been able to pierce the North American market, and that's where the money is. But having said that, Monster Hunter Worlds was really successful in North America. But it's going to be curious to see if Rise can have that same success, as Rise will not exactly be the main game, right? It's more of a spin-off or a B game,
Well,
rather. So we'll see.
yeah, they did say that it's not considered one, but we'll see. But if you've watched the videos, man, it looks pretty amazing. I cannot wait. And you're right. I'm glad you brought up World. I was going to bring it up myself. World has introduced the Monster Hunter series more in non-Japanese markets, and it's a great game, by the way. I don't know if you've played it. I really like it. The only issue is there's no cross-play, so I can't play with my buddies that have it on console, etc. But besides the point, Rise I think is going to do extremely well internationally as well, of course, as in Japan. But you're right, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate. But World, after World's released, I think Dragon Hunter series, I'm sorry, Dragon Hunter, Monster Hunter series is in a much better position, and that's going to be a huge system seller. So it's going to be interesting. But I do agree that the Switch should surpass the Wii. And yeah, I'm looking forward to what Nintendo has. But after Zelda, because they've been kind of quiet, and Jared was talking about that as well. So, what are they working on besides that? And by the way, I'm glad you brought up Fire Emblem. It's also the best, Three Houses, the best, it's the best seller in the series. So, that's good because I think that's a hugely underrated series, and I'm glad to see it's getting some love. So, that's great.
Yeah, the only other story I wanted to talk about was that I think Super Mario Maker 2, I don't think we're gonna get more from that series, because I don't think it performed up to their standards. Because if you look at everything on the Switch and everything, how much it sold, like Super Mario Maker, the original, I think sold 4 million copies on the Wii U. And I'm not even sure if Mario Maker 2 has surpassed that amount yet.
Interesting. I wonder why.
And they've listed all those the Nintendo games on the Switch that have sold 1 million copies since April of this year. And Mario Maker 2 is not in there.
Interesting. I wonder why.
Yeah, I don't think it did as well as they, and especially I thought Mario Maker 2 would like destroy the would sell gangbusters, because everything on Switch like basically is breaking records, especially when you look at franchises like Zelda, who were never a big seller. Yep. Going to 20 million, like it's ridiculous. And if you want to buy Zelda today, you're still gonna have to spend the full price. Like they have never like put that game, maybe here and there on a store you got like $10 or $15 off, maybe 20, but it's always like retailing at $80 Canadian. Exactly. Here. So it's like, that's why I tell people, like, that's the model I would do, because Zelda is still selling, and it's yep. better to sell 20 million copies at $80 than 20 million copies at $30. Because if you're a Sony fan and you have a PlayStation 4 and you're going to buy a PlayStation 5, I don't know why you buy any of their games at launch, because if you wait 3 months, they're going to be giving them for like $20 or $30. They've always been doing that, and maybe it works for them, but I don't understand that model.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think at the end of the day, I've learned over the years is I don't like being first anymore either, because at the end of the day, you end up spending premium when you just wait a little while and things.
But that model does not work with Nintendo. If you buy a game at a launch Nintendo game, you know that 3 years later it will still be that price, so you don't feel bad about it.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. And also to add, like, look at Pikmin 3. It's technically a remaster of a Wii U game, and it's $59.99. And you know it's actually doing pretty decent. It's actually sold more than the Wii U version, but that's not saying much. The Wii U was kind of a disaster for Nintendo.
You sure about that? Because I heard a story that in the UK it did less than the Wii U version, but that doesn't mean much. The UK is not the strongest Nintendo market, but... like the perfect example is New Super Mario Bros. U. The deluxe version has sold like 6 million copies so far on the Switch. Like, and that's, they've priced it full price, and it's just the same game that was released in 2012. And like they've made like Mario Kart 8, same thing. Mario Kart 8 is the best-selling game on Switch.
Wow.
It's a Wii U port, and it's full price, and they are making gangbusters. I think it's like 28 million copies sold of that game. Like, that's easy money.
Oh, it is.
So, So it's just stuff that makes sense.
And it's weird, man. It's weird. It's like very few companies can have that luxury that Nintendo does. I mean, think about it.
It takes years to build that. Like, if that's why I don't understand, like, Sony, like, when they have games like Horizon Zero Dawn, like, fantastic games like that, they should just trust their games and, like, keep them at that price after that. But... for a consumer, this is better for the consumer. So, like, it's good for consumers because they get to experience these AAA games for half the price, like, not even a year in. So that's good for them. But it just, for me, I think it devalues your franchises. And then when you release the sequels later, I'm not sure if it's the best way to do it. But what do I know?
Exactly. And got some good points, good conversations so far. But I want to ask though, Stephen. Since it's coming up with the holidays, it's kind of nice to see what you're look. I want us to talk about a little bit as what games are you actually looking forward for the year going forward. I'll let you go first, and then I'll add my bit, and then we'll see. Because I'm interested to see what you are looking forward to. Obviously, you can guess one of them, but maybe you'll have some surprises.
Yeah. I don't really have much. I only have one game that I'm looking forward to. And that's Hyrule Warriors Calamity Wars. Ooh. And that should come out this week, I believe. Maybe next week. But this is a weekend game. Like, you can play that game and beat it in like 10, 12 hours and then be done with it. So I'm a bit worried right now because I'm not really looking forward to much. Like, I'm in the mood to play... I've always been in the mood to play Pokemon, like I've said. And now I'm reaching the point where like I'm struggling to find stuff to do there. So I hope maybe we'll get another mystery dungeon like we did last year in February, something like that. But for now, I only have Hyrule Warriors.
Oh,
So
interesting,
yeah.
interesting. That's interesting. Now, I think I've told you several times, I'm not a fan of hack and slash games, so it's not one I'm interested in. I might download the demo and stream it just for shits and giggles, but I'm not sure. But for me, I'm actually really looking forward to Senku'a of Rice and Ruin. It's a brand new Switch game. It's also not just on Switch, it's on PC, on Steam, PlayStation, etc. It is an interesting game. It's part 3D, part 2D platforming, kind of an action game. It has farm elements, but it's not really a 100% a farm simulation game. The whole thing is the better rice you produce, more powerful your character becomes. It's integrated in there. You also have crafting of where you gather materials on beating monsters to craft better materials, better armor and weapons for your character, and it looks amazing. And what's the most amazing parts from an indie developer, but it's made by basically two people. And when you t if you take a look at it, guys, you would never tell. I mean, the game looks amazing, and I'm really interested to give it a try. And also looking forward to another game that's on the Switch. It's not exclusive, is Dragon Lapras. It's an old 8-bit game. Well, it's not technically an 8-bit game, it's a new game, but plays it's featuring retro graphics. But the big bad daddy I'm really looking forward to next month is Cyberpunk 2077, which unfortunately is not coming to the Switch. It is coming to the other consoles and PC. And that's as kind of going to talk very quickly, and I want to see what Steven thinks about this, is just to let you guys know, something like Cyberpunk cannot be done on the Switch. Switch just cannot natively handle it. But they also had a Switch release just recently of Control Cloud Edition, which, again, that game cannot be done natively on the Switch. But due to the amazing technology of cloud, they are allowed to have that kind of high-end game graphics and visuals on the Nintendo Switch. And I wanted to see your take on that, Steven. Is this kind of a feature that Nintendo could embrace with third-party promote in order to get stuff like Cyberpunk 2077 fully playable and beautiful on the Switch without worrying about the hardware limitations of the system? It's very interesting and fascinating because if Nintendo's smart, they could potentially, as we know, they have not had a competitive console in terms of competing with their rivals for some time now. Since I think GameCube was actually the last one that was competitive in terms of visuals and audio. Since the Wii, it's been not the case. I mean, I still think the Switch produces some great visuals, but we do know facts are facts, and it is not a powerhouse compared to the other systems. So I wanted to see what your take about the whole potential of cloud versions of gaming, allowing Nintendo fans to play epic games that are not native or can't be done on their system.
Yeah, this is actually not really new, but
No, it's not, though.
because they've done this, I think it was in 2018, maybe. Resident Evil 7 was actually available on Switch in Japan via cloud services, and I think it was a rental service back
Yeah.
then. Like you could rent Biohazard 7 and play it for a fee. And there was also, I think, an Assassin's Creed game that was also available during that way. So it just was never available here. And the problem with Control right now is that it's not a rental service. It's a full price game, and there's like when you buy this, you are only buying like the license to play the game, which is what you're doing with a game really. But the problem is, let's say you'll need internet to play it, and if the game, there's even, I think, a disclaimer that the game could be taking offline at any moment. So basically you don't know when this will end, and if this does, do you get your money back? We don't know. So it just I'm not sure how this will work. I think this is a niche market. Like I said, this is a portable. You need a pretty strong internet connection to be able to play this game, and I don't think most of the world has access to that. I certainly cannot. I don't. I was curious. I was actually thinking of buying Control and Switch just to see how it would work on my internet connection, because I don't have the same internet connection that you guys do, but I haven't. It's not really a game I'm looking forward to. If there's a game that I want to play that does this eventually, I'll try. But it's just like I think this might work 5-10 years when everybody has access to better internet and when there's hotspots everywhere, because this is a portable. You're not necessarily going to have access to internet all the time. But yeah, it's a clever way to get around the power issues of the Switch. But I'm not exactly sure if it's the right year to do so. Like, it's a cool concept, but I think it's a bit ahead of its time for now.
And I agree with that. And the same thing with the Google Stadia, I think, is a little bit ahead of its time. And you run up a fact about pricing, too, because there's a couple of issues. One, you're right, you're only renting in theory. And two, where are you going to get your money back? And another thing, in 2 to 3 to 4 or 5 years, there's no guarantee that they already gave you the warning, obviously, but there's no guarantee you could play Control, which kind of sucks from a collector's point of view, people who really enjoy collecting or actually owning their games. But yeah, it's interesting. But I'm actually really interested in it from the fact that potentially you could have in the future. But you're right, the infrastructure is just not there for it, unfortunately. There's a lot of parts. I'm lucky that I live in a major city with a huge, beautiful bandwidth and stuff like that, but not everyone has that luxury. And I do think cloud's way ahead of its time, but in the end day, you could have something like Google's system where it's basically you pay $150 for the device that allows you to connect. So that's attractive from that standpoint, but you're right. But it's just going to be interesting to see what the future brings. And I don't think Nintendo's going to really embrace it this gen, maybe their next system, but we'll see. But good conversations. And then, there's only a few things. And I was also going to say is I am actually looking kind of curious about the Xbox Series X, because it has a cool feature, quick resume. We could always talk about that in a different topic because it's not really Nintendo related. But Dragon Quest fans, though, and this is kind of Nintendo related, the creator teases for announcements for the 35th anniversary next year. So there's going to be a lot of Dragon Quest surprises, I think, next year. And hopefully we'll get an update on Dragon Quest Hunters 3. I think that's been kind of delayed because they didn't like the direction that the development was going. So that's kinda...
What game are you talking about? Dragon Quest Hunters 3?
Yeah, that's the one that's based, it's a prequel to Dragon Quest 11 that deals with Eric and his sister when they were little kids. So I'm really looking forward to that. And you know that it's kind of like a...
Dragon Quest Hunters.
No, sorry. Fuck, there I go with Hunter. Monsters, forgive me,
guys. Oh, Monsters. Okay, oh, yeah. My God. I was wondering what you were talking about.
I'm having Monster Hunter on my mind. Sorry, yeah. Good thing. Good catch, Steven. If it wasn't a podcast where I messed up, it wouldn't be a podcast, guys. Sorry about that. But yes, Monsters. So are you... I'm wondering if you're a fan of that series. I'm pretty sure
I am. Yeah. I am. I love... Dragon Quest Monster Joker on the original DS. Nice. I have the Japanese versions on the 3DS. I've dabbled with the Game Boy Color games back in the day, but never played too much. Jared obviously knows a lot more. They're good games. I prefer the Pokemon style of catching and taming monsters. I don't like when catching a monster is more luck-based, when you have to convince him to join you, and then you're not necessarily sure if he will or if he won't, but that's my only gripe with the series. And it's a gripe that I have with most monster catching games, but it's a lot of fun. And it's like, yeah, I wish we would have gotten the 3DS Japanese games localized, because those were pretty cool. But no, this is great, but I don't think this will come stateside, unfortunately.
Oh, that would suck.
Yeah, it would suck, because we never got Dragon Quest Heroes 1 plus 2 on Switch, and that was a launch game in Japan. We never got it here. Even though Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2 were released on the PlayStation 4. So I don't know. I don't think this is a game that we will be getting here, but I am curious to see when they will announce Dragon Quest 12. Jared would know a lot more about me than I do. So like usually they announce like the logo and whatever. So I think they haven't even done that yet. So the game should be years away unless they break protocol and they actually do like what is more common these days and announce a game and then release it 6 months later. That would be nice if they would change their model a bit, but I don't think they will. So Dragon Quest 12, I think, is still many years away, but you would think they would have something big for their 35th anniversary.
Guarantee they will, yes. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they announce. And what's cool is these games are being released, like Dragon Quest 11 Special Edition, the S, just got released on PC. So I'm not going to buy it because it's basically, I'm not going to rebuy the whole game just for the 2D mode. But it's good to see that Square is, or actually not just Square, but other developers, Sony, everyone is embracing PCs. It used to be the day where stuff like Horizon Down or, you know, Gears of War would never be, well, Gears of War is a bad example because it's Microsoft. But yeah, as you know, that I'm able to play a lot of console exclusives that I would never had access to before unless I bought the system. So, like, I haven't bought PlayStation or Xbox for a while, so it's good to see. And I kind of agree with you, but there's some glimmer of hope. The fact that Square's been releasing Dragon Quest on multiple systems, you never know, man. We might get the new Monsters game, but
Because you say Square, but Nintendo has been publishing most of these Dragon Quest games here in the West. Like, yeah, the only exception is Dragon Quest 11, and that's only like, I believe Dragon Quest 11 S was published by Nintendo here on the Switch.
Yep.
So, yeah, and I know all the 3DS games were published by Nintendo here. So Jared and I have talked about this forever now, and it feels like beating a dead horse, but
yeah,
I don't think Square has really given the series a chance. But then again, I'm not sure if I can blame them anymore because I don't think Dragon Quest XI sold particularly. Like, I think it did better than usual, but I don't think it broke any records or broke the bank. So
I don't know. Sad.
Yeah, sad. I think maybe that's fair. Maybe that's good. Like, it doesn't. Certain games don't need to sell millions and millions of copies to be profitable. Like, they will always have their 3 to 4 million copies sold in Japan, and maybe they can pick up an extra 500,000 here, maybe even reach a million, and that's more money for them. So,
not exactly.
Like I said, though, like we've said before, they need to release these games worldwide day one, and that's, you can't have success here when you release a game 6 months or a year after.
No,
it doesn't work because we're in the day of age. It's not like magazines anymore. If a game is out in Japan, we know about it, and most people do not buy old stuff. Like, they want the brand new toy, and it needs to be released day in and day out. So hopefully they learned their lesson there.
And I agree 100% with you, Stephen. Excellent points, and I do hope for the best. And I'm pretty sure Jared and you will be covering that in the future next year with all the teasers they're going to get for the 34th anniversary. But on that note, we're almost an hour, Stephen. I think we had excellent topics for Nintendo fanboys this week. And hopefully, like you said, we get back on schedule. Either you, myself, and I, we could do it if Jared's not available. And just to give a quick update, guys, Jared is not gone. He is just very, very busy with work, and he has not had time to break away from that. And we can understand that. So, but doesn't mean we can't give him a hard time, lazy bum. Just kidding.
All right, so I think that'll be it for today. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you hopefully in a week or two.
Yeah, exactly. Take care, guys. Bye.